Yes, it is Pet Chat, and I'm joined by Dr. Kimberly Earle, no Cheryl today. Good morning, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. I don't know where I am today. It's all go. Now, what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about urinary tract issues in your pets. This week, I've been seeing a lot of cases of wee, or I've been looking at a lot of samples of urine wee from a variety of pets, and I thought it was a good thing to maybe highlight some of the issues that we can get. So a lot of the cases that I've been seeing this week have been related to dogs who are weeing inappropriately or who are weeing more often than usual. So the owners will come in and say, I took her for her normal morning walk, and instead of peeing twice, the dog, you know, every 5 steps, she was squatting to wee, things like that. And that rings some real alarm bells for us, because obviously that's not a normal, you know, sort of scenario. In the case that I'm thinking about, it was a female dog and she was squatting a lot more than usual. And the owner was thoughtful enough to bring us a urine sample, and we had a look at it under the microscope. There's a number of different tests we do. We do a little urine strip that lets us know about the chemical composition of the urine. We put it on a little meter that reads the concentration or the strength, how concentrated the urine is. And then we also spin a sample down and we have a look at it underneath the microscope. And what we found in this little dog was that the urine pH had crept up. So normally dogs will have an acidic urine pH, but this one had crept up. She had some microscopic blood in it. She had some microscopic red blood cells as well as white blood cells in it. And the urine-specific gravity was still good, nice and concentrated. That's a good measure for kidney function. And then when we looked at it underneath the microscope, well, we saw a combination of a lot of inflammatory cells, so white blood cells in there, some red blood cells as well. We saw a lot of crystals and we saw bacteria, and in high numbers. Now, bacteria in dogs in the bladder, if you're giving me a free catch urine sample, so you've stuck a little, you know, plastic container under the dog as she's squatting urine, I don't expect it to be sterile, but it shouldn't have high numbers of bacteria. And in this case, we had lots and lots of bacteria. And going along with all those other symptoms, this little dog had a urinary tract infection. And so that is something that we see quite commonly. And unfortunately, dogs are pretty stoic. So they will often not tell us or not show a clinical sign until it's quite advanced. And in this little dog's case, it was a really, you know, it was a pretty marked. A human would have, like, been to their doctor days and days before. But this poor little dog had quite a serious urinary tract infection. So that's good. We've started her on some antibiotics. We've started her on some anti-inflammatories for some pain relief. We have increased the amount of water she's taking into her body to help flush the urine out of her system. So we've instructed her owner to swap for a few days to more wet food rather than dry food. And she's improving already. She'll need to do her full course of antibiotics, but she's improving already. So urinary tract infection is absolutely something that we can see a lot in dogs. But then I had a urine sample from a cat. And the cat was a similar age, similar sorts of problems. The owner said, oh, this cat's jumping in and out of the litter box. It's not really producing a large wee. There's some little wees happening, but not really producing a large amount of wee. Still a female cat in this particular instance. And when we looked at the sample, what we saw was a very low pH, so a nice acidic pH, lots of blood cells, red blood cells, but not very many white blood cells. And we didn't see, when we looked under the microscope, we didn't see any bacteria. Okay. And the difference between cats and dogs is that unless you've got a cat that's quite a senior cat, usually 10 to 12 years of age or older, urinary tract infections in cats are actually really rare. But cats get, because cats are special, cats get stress cystitis, which is usually a sterile condition. It's not an infection, but it's an inflammatory condition where the bladder becomes really inflamed and they start to ooze a bit of blood and everything is very, you know, uncomfortable. And when we look at these guys, they don't have an infection that we can treat with antibiotics. It's really that their physiological response to stressful things happening in the environment, and that might be that they're in a multi-cat household. That might be that there's a dog in the neighborhood or in the house. It might be, we see it all the time when people bring new babies home. And so it's really, really important that if you're seeing, you know, some of these urinary tract infections, that you get your pet, dog, cat or rabbit, into the veterinary clinic. If you can, we'd really love a urine sample. That's very easy to get in a dog. It's a little bit harder in a cat, but we can, if you call us up, we can give some instructions on how to potentially do that or how to facilitate us collecting a sample when you bring the cat for their clinical exam. So, you know, in some cases, particularly if you've got a male cat, we see a lot of obstructive urinary tract disease. They have very small, tiny little urethras running through their little tiny penises, and they can get obstructed with crystals and stones and plugs of protein sometimes. So can be a real emergency.
Mm. Okay. So apart from, you know, you seeing it,
yep.
the problems within the urine.
Yeah.
When, you know, when humans get urinary tract infections,
yep.
it's painful.
Absolutely.
So are the animals in pain?
They are, yeah,
so
they are.
So they make, like, noises, or is the fact that the dog was just going in small
right.
amounts
yeah.
sort of indicates?
So in the case of dogs, we rarely will hear a sound, or like, they don't show an obvious sign that they're in pain other than the fact that they're, you know, stopping to urinate quite frequently. Sometimes there will be straining. If they get an actual bladder stone, they will sit, and they will sit in a squatted position, or a you know, the position where they're trying to just push urine out. They'll do that for prolonged periods of time. Cats can be a little bit more helpful. We will often hear of cats, you know, the owners report, my cat was jumping in and out of the litter box frequently and nothing came out, and he was yowling, particularly the boy cats. If they're on their way to obstruction or if they're obstructed, they'll, you know, be doing that cat yowl where they're really uncomfortable. Female cats may not make noise because it's much less likely for them to become obstructed. If we think about the anatomy of males versus females, just as in humans, males have a much longer tube, urethra, to get out of the body. And so it's much more prone to becoming blocked if we get anything that's solid that's trying to pass through the bladder, whereas females have a much shorter urethra and it's a bit more wide open. It doesn't taper as much. And so it's much more rare for a female animal to become obstructed. So they can still get the infections or the inflammation, but they're not going to get themselves into quite the same degree of trouble as a male. So, yeah, really important.
Okay. Mm. Well, if you've got any cat or dog related questions about urinary tract infections or any other infection, or if you've got a hamster that needs help, or a bird, what
absolutely.
Other animals?
Rabbits,
lizard,
yeah, rabbits know. And guinea pigs, yeah, whatever.
You can give us a call on 49216216. You'll also go into the draw to win a $50 pet food voucher. Now, since we have had no calls at the moment, you're in, you know, you've got a good
I'll
chance of winning.
I'll just take the voucher,
you
know? Thanks. Yeah, that's
so
right.
Give us a call now. This is 2 and URFM. Hi, Olwen. How can we help?
I have a corgi, female corgi. She's been de-sexed.
Mm-hmm.
She's 4-year-old, and yeah, she was given to my daughter to give to me because I like corgis. Oh,
great.
Yeah. But she has, well, previously she'd been pooping up a bed every night. The last two nights, it's like somebody has gone through their room with a fire hose.
Oh, but dear.
She has wet so much that I couldn't believe any dog could wet so much.
Right, okay. And that's just happening in the last couple of days?
The last couple of days, this wetting.
Right, okay. So that's a bit of an interesting thing. I mean, I would definitely get her checked out if it's a new behavior for her. It has been pretty cold the last few nights. And so sometimes we will find that dogs, but she's not old. I mean, she's only 4. So we will sometimes find that when we put them out to the toilet before we go to bed of an evening, if it's cold, some dogs be like, oh, I don't want to be out here. And so they don't empty their bladders or sometimes even their bowels. And then sometimes they, you know, will come back inside and they just can't hold it through the night then. Is she drinking more than usual, Olwen?
No, she'll quite often. She drinks a fair bit. But, she's the fattest dog I've ever seen. She's like a German Shepherd on short legs.
Oh, dear. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, that makes it hard for them too, right? Because they have a harder time with mobility if they're overweight. There's often more intra-abdominal fat, so their bladder can't expand as much, things like that. So that would definitely be something worth, asking your vet to help you with a diet plan to try to get, you know, some weight off of her. And because corgis have that long back with short little legs, there's a lot lot of pressure on their spines, just like there is with dachshunds, and that can be really dangerous for their spines as well. So it's definitely worthwhile trying to get some weight off of her, which can be challenging, but it's absolutely doable, and your vet can help you with that. I would, you know, from a standpoint of what she's done, you know, wetting in the room overnight. So just make sure tonight when you put her out that she has a good amount of time to, you know, sort of to go to the toilet, maybe even put her out an extra time before you sort of put her into bed. It's not hot out at the moment, so you could think about taking the water away from her. You know, an hour or 90 minutes before she goes to bed, so she's not sort of filling up with water before bed, and then put her out after that. And if it continues, then, you know, again, when you pop into your vet, have a chat about weight, but also see if you can bring a urine sample. It can be tricky with a little dog who's so low to the ground like a corgi, but we would recommend take a fairly flat takeaway container and put the corner of it, so hold it at a bit of a sort of a triangle, and put it in underneath behind her tail. So don't try to get in from the front. Just try go in from the back under her tail.
Okie doke.
Okay.
But it's hard to keep her on a diet. She eats her food, and if I turn my back, she eats my other dog's food.
Yeah.
And she'll go around, she'll clean up after the cats.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, put the cat's food up. Find a nice shelf where you can put them on top of the washing machine. Put their food up so she can't reach it. And with the other dog, what we always say for any dog, really, is put the food down. If they haven't eaten it within 15 minutes, pick it back up. And so that way you can maybe separate her from the other dog, have them separated for the 15, 20 minutes that the food's available, and then pick the other dog's food up if it hasn't eaten it. If your dog's not eating it and otherwise well, it means it's not hungry, so, you know, it doesn't need that food. And then for her food, we're going to need to cut down the volume so she's not getting as many calories.
Right. Yeah, well, I started mixing vegetables with a tea for
great.
Her.
Yep, that will help. That will reduce the calories.
Choco, zucchinis, carrots.
Yep, fantastic.
Sweet potato.
Yeah, all that stuff is great, so no dramas there.
Okie dokie.
Thanks,
okay.
Owen.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, all the best. Your Station 2 and your RFM. This is Pet Chat, and we've got Sophia from Cessnock on the line. Hi, Sophia, how can we help you?
Hi. I have an issue. We got a new puppy back in April.
Okay.
And she's fine. She eats a lot. She goes out to play. She interacts. As soon as we leave the kitchen, she will be on the floor.
Okay.
We've tried reinforcing, you know, good behavior when she doesn't do it. We've tried reinforcement when she goes to the toilet outside. She's crate trained and yep. She sleeps in the laundry.
Yep.
If she's left loose in the laundry, she doesn't wait. But
okay.
As soon as she's back in the kitchen, there's puddles on the floor.
Okay. All right. So she has developed a habit of urinating in the kitchen. That's sort of becoming her preferred location, most likely. It's possible, I mean, I presume your kitchen has an impermeable floor or tiles or you know, vinyl or something like that. So it's really important we make sure that we're using an odor-removing sort of cleaner to make sure that there's no protein enzymes sort of left on the floor. They can sometimes get into the grout around tiles and things like that, and that might be attracting her. But this is basically, it sounds to me like a preference-based, you know, urination. And so she's developed a preference. There's something about that space maybe that she feels safe or comfortable. I would say it means that she doesn't get left in the kitchen until she's broken that habit, or that we, you know, put her on a leash. If you're in the kitchen, put her on a leash and have her, you know, attached to you so that you've always got her sort of nearby. It might be that you have to, before you leave her in the kitchen, that you take her out to the toilet and give her the opportunity to wee. And unfortunately, with puppies, we often have to, because their little brains are so active and they get so distracted, we often have to stand outside with them for a, you know, particularly long period of time, you know, sort of 5 or 10 minutes sometimes, wait till they actually do pee, because just giving them the opportunity to doesn't mean that that's what they'll actually do. before you bring her in, you know, sort of to the kitchen. I think if she's crate trained and you know that she can hold on to her ear and there's no problem there, then rather than leaving her in the kitchen, I would leave her in her crate or in the laundry where she's not, you know, doing that habit. It's probably a more enclosed space, the laundry, and so she maybe doesn't feel comfortable that she can get far enough away from her urine or her body functions to be clean, because dogs are actually inherently really clean. They don't want a toilet where they're going to sleep or rest. So, but the kitchen space is probably bigger. And so when you sort of go, well, okay, she can pee here, she can get away from it and still be comfortable, and she's developed a, you know, a sense of, you know, safety, security, or preference for whatever it is there. It sounds to me like it's a training issue, and not so much a training, but she's developed a habit of doing it there. And I've told people the story before of my first golden retriever when I was a young human, 20 years old, whatever, and I had a golden retriever puppy who was born in winter in Canada. And she developed a preference for peeing on the snow because that's all there was on the ground. Everywhere was snow. And as spring came, she would pee, she would seek out smaller and smaller patches of snow until literally, you know, there was like a dinner plate size patch of ice at the end of the driveway where the snow pile had been. And she was peeing on that. And then once that was gone, she was like, oh, I guess I just have to pee somewhere else. But she had developed a real preference for peeing on snow because that's all she knew as a puppy. So I suspect that something is similar happening here. You've also mentioned in the little blurb that there's an older dog in the kitchen. Is the older dog urinating in the kitchen as well?
We've had a couple of incidents and they seem to take opposite sides of the room, so yeah. We can tell who's who. But I think he's a miniature Dachshund and she's a Boston Terrier, so both small dogs. And I think he's just saying, well, she's done it, I'm
going to
do it.
Yeah, you know, for sure. Yeah. So I'd really like you to, if you can, you know, buy yourself a bit of a jug of like a pet-owned odor remover and go through and just mop the whole kitchen floor with it. So we make sure that we're getting rid of those, you know, stains. You'll mop the kitchen floor and let it dry. And then hopefully that will help with that. But they can sometimes play off each other. But then she will look to the older dog and go, well, he did it, I can do it. So it's a bit of a self-fulfilling, you know, sort of prophecy. So utilize your crate. If she's happy in the crate, utilize the crate a little bit more. You might need to do it for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks just to really break that cycle of her, you know, not peeing in the kitchen just by not being in there. Like, you know, you're off limits here. Like 3 strikes, you're out, puppy. But you'll get there. She's just still a puppy at this age, so it takes a bit of time.
We lost Sophia?
Maybe.
Oh, no, I can do
it. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So just give it some time. Try to break the habit. Don't give her the access. And I'm sure you'll get there.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Sophia.
Great.
Thanks for calling. Okay. Next on the line, we have Charmaine from Largs. Hi, Charmaine. Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a 3-year-old Shoodle. And she's a beautiful dog.
Yeah.
Shih Tzu cross poodle.
Yeah.
And her problem is licking. And I know that's a form of communication and affection.
Mm-hmm.
But she licks you all the time. And if we have people come, she'll keep licking them, you know.
Right.
And I'll say to her, no. And she'll stop for a little while.
Yeah.
But she does do that. Is there something I can do to try to deter her?
Yeah, so licking is usually what we would call an appeasement behavior. So she's sort of showing her
affection.
Not affection, actually. She's actually showing subservience, like submissiveness, right? So she's sort of saying, you're coming into my territory and I acknowledge you as being, you know, above me in the pecking order, if we have a pecking order.
Okay.
And she's trying to then, so it can be based in anxiety a little bit when we get these dogs that are really over expressing that behavior. It means she's sort of like, I'm really unsure. You've come into my house and I'm not sure if you're here to stay or not, but just in case you are, I'm just going to treat you with the utmost respect. So what we want to try to do is we want to try to ignore that behavior, but we need to sort of not let her like continue to sort of show that obsessive behavior. So I would try to distract her with some really nice treats, or if, you know, maybe if you know you've got friends coming over, hold off feeding her if she's coming due for a meal. Wait till they get here and she gets a bit of a chance to, you know, you can have her greet them. I don't think that's a problem. But then if she's constantly into this, you know, obsessive licking, we want to sort of say, nope, you're done. Like, that's enough. And here's something really good. Go and, you know, you've done what you needed to do. Eat your food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then try to see, you could see if they can engage her in play rather than, you know, just cuddles and things like that. So, you know, if she's a nice young dog, if she has a little toy that she'll do a little game of tug of war with, or a little bit of, you know, fetch, chase the ball, that kind of thing, that can be really helpful. Give her a little treat, like a chew treat, a veggie ear or pig's ear or something like that, that she can have for a little bit to, you know, after she's done her greeting. Because what we don't want her to do is focus on this anxiety, potentially anxiety. It may not be anxiety, but we don't want her to sort of focus on that. Like, I've really got to just show you that, like, I'm subservient to you, that sort of thing. So, you know, let her greet them, be really pleasant. And then, you know, more or less, I would just sort of ignore her, because if they're paying her lots of attention, they're sort of inadvertently reinforcing that they're approving of that behavior. And she's, and, you know, and so she's trying to just see, sort of keep it going. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks. Yep.
Thank you. I've got one more thing, but I'll ring up next week maybe.
Okay, sure.
Oh, you can ask now if you want to.
Can I? Okay.
Yeah.
You had the other caller and her dog weed in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Now, mine goes out and I have to stand out with her for a good 5-10 minutes before she'll do it.
Yep.
I do that. But sometimes she's gone to weeing in our bedroom.
Mm.
I've got her crate in the bedroom.
Yep.
And when she's done it, I clean it. I get the carpet steamer and I clean that. Mm-hmm. But she has done it and my husband is not happy. He says, you know, this is not right. And I'm wondering, how can I stop that? She doesn't do it that often.
Yeah.
But when you think, oh, yeah, she's not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
6 weeks later, bang.
She'll do it again. Yeah, I mean, it is a bit of a tricky thing. And like I was saying to the last caller, make sure that you are using a pet odor remover, even on top of the steamer. The steamer will get the physical, like, urine, the color and stuff out, but it won't necessarily get rid of the proteins. And in fact, when you use a steamer, if it's a hot air steamer, it can actually denature the proteins, kind of cook them into your carpet. So you really want to be using a pet odor remover, you know, an actual urine remover before you do the steamer. You can do the steamer over top of it, but you really want to, you know, follow the instructions on the packet for the urine remover, because otherwise it can still draw them back a little bit. And, you know, it does to me sound like a little bit of probably a training thing. Although, like you said, if she's doing it just in
the
bedroom.
She goes outside during the day perfectly.
Perfectly,
you know?
Well, yeah.
And just once in a while if you've got.
Yeah.
So now I close the door unless
absolutely.
I'm with her and I can see it. Yeah,
that's right. And that's what I would do. Again, limit her access. It does sound like your little dog might have some just very vague underlying, you know, anxiety behaviors, because sometimes, again, that urination can be a bit of a submissive thing, but it may, it's hard to say that just from this little bit of history. It's hard to say that that's what she's doing in the bedroom. It might just be that, you know, she's a young dog and she's gone, oh, I forgot to go to the toilet and now I really have to go, and, you know, it's too cold to go outside, Mom. I don't want to go outside in the middle of the
night.
Yeah,
going, so,
that's good. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're
Thanks,
very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. You're listening to Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we have Greg on the line from Lambton. Hi, Greg. How can we help you?
Hello. How are you today?
We're
great,
good,
thank
thanks.
You.
That's good. Look, I'd like to talk about my dog and itchy skin, please.
Sure.
He's 7 years old.
Yep.
For the first 5 years, we lived near the beach and he swam daily, so everything was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last couple of years, it's been a persistent scratching.
Yep.
He's been to the vet about it a few times, and of course, Apoquel has been prescribed.
Yep.
Which I find rather expensive to constantly purchase.
Yep.
I was hoping you'd have some alternative that I can treat this itchy skin with.
Yeah.
There's no redness. There's no rashes. It's just constant scratching.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a hard thing, Greg, because I'm a pet owner with a dog with really bad allergic skin disease as well.
Yes.
And you know, so we've been through a process of trying to work out what her allergens are. We've done the food trials to see if mm-hmm. she's food allergic, which she's not, and most dogs aren't, but a few of them are. So I'm sure your vet yes. has recommended you go through a diet trial just to see, because that can really make yes. a difference if you happen to have a food allergic dog. Mm-hmm. And then we do, so with my dog, we certainly use Apoquel. She had a tablet this morning. I use some of the monthly injections, the long-acting injections as well, which really keeps yes. the baseline she's much more comfortable, but they're moderately expensive as well. In the old days, we used to hit these guys with a lot of steroids, right? And steroids they're great. They work really well, and they're inexpensive. But of course, they have quite a high rate of side effects. And so the trouble with steroids is that when they're on them long term, we end up with dogs who then can end up with secondary. It suppresses their immune system.
Yeah.
So, and initially, it'll suppress their immune system so that they're not itchy. But then it can start to suppress their ability to fight off infections. So then we find that over time, then they're developing infections in the skin, urinary tract mm-hmm. infections, other, you know, issues like that.
Yeah, the Apoquel is also an immune suppressant, isn't it?
It is, to a certain degree, but not, I don't think it is the same way that the steroids are. And then the other problem with the steroids is we have the issues of persistent, they get a lot of weight gain, and they also drink a lot of water. They sometimes will have urinary issues because they're so thirsty. And they're producing more. It's a diuretic, so they're producing more urine. I use a lot of topical products. So I guess, what kind of a dog have you got?
He's a Bull Arab Blue Cattle Dog Cross.
Yeah, so a relatively short-coated dog. So I'm a real fan of using a lot of topical products as well in a dog like that. And if his itching is generalized, I would be really on top of, good medicated bathing, making sure that we don't have even low-level skin infections. But also there's some great anti-inflammatory conditioners. There's a conditioner in particular. It is a prescription product that your vet would know about, though, but it's a once a week conditioner that you sort of can rub onto the dog, into the fur, and it can help. It is a steroid, but because you're applying it topically, it doesn't have the same degree of systemic effect. There is a spray, or a couple different brands that are a spray steroid as well, and if their itching is more local, then they're really helpful, but I find it's really hard. You can't really coat the whole dog in a spray, but you can rub a conditioner into them, which can be really helpful. I like to use antihistamines because some dogs will get a great response to antihistamines. Others don't, but antihistamines, there's a variety of them available. There's some dog ones. I would always try with the registered dog ones first, but if those don't work, then, you know, try some human ones. And we do have to cycle through them. They're, you know, some dogs will not have a good response to, say, a Claritin-type antihistamine, but they'll have a good response to a Zyrtec.
Yeah, I found that difficult to do as far as the dosage, depending on weight and milligrams.
Yeah, also, that's right.
What about diet? I have been giving him some more oily fish like sardines.
Yeah, sure.
Okay?
Yes, absolutely. And there are some great dermatological diets that are not hypoallergenic, but that are meant to support the health, the healthy coat. So Royal Canin makes one called Skin Topic. Hills makes one called Derma Select or something like that. Both of them have been recommended by my dog's dermatologist. She likes them. She likes to eat them. They seem to help her out. The only thing I would say is because they are quite high in fish oils, my dog, who's a golden retriever, gets fat on them. So I sort of I'll put her through like one or two bags of them, and then we'll go off for a bag so that she doesn't get overweight. So I'm just trying to balance that a little bit. But again, that can be really helpful as well.
And that was my other question too. Some supplements like cod liver oil or something, or
again, I think you can definitely use it. They have shown that in order to get the levels high enough to be helpful in some cases, that you have to give so much that it can cause. You've got to just watch out for like causing an upset stomach or pancreatitis in some of them, because we're really talking for dogs. We're probably needing to be giving sort of 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams of a fish oil in a lot of cases to make a difference. So the foods seem to do a really good job job of putting quite a high level in and keeping the dog's tummy comfortable. So,
yeah. Okay, thank you so much for your call, Greg.
Good luck, Greg.
Really appreciate it. Next, we've got Karen from Rutherford. Hi, Karen. How can we help?
Hello. I'm ringing up. I've got a guinea pig. He's about 11 months old, nearly one.
Yep.
And he's like a really fluffy one.
Yes.
Now, his hair is probably about nearly 2 inches long at the moment.
Okay.
Being winter, should I just trim it a little bit for him? Because he seems to get annoyed by it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the issue is whether or not he's getting tangled in it, right? Some guinea pigs do grow a really, really long coat, like even down to the ground. So if he's not being annoyed by it, then it probably doesn't need to be trimmed. But certainly in a male guinea pig, we will sometimes find that they can get a bit of fecal matting around the back end or underneath the belly if it's getting tangly underneath there. In that case, I absolutely would trim it up just gently with some, you know, some scissors, anywhere that it looks like it's getting mats. Really important with long-haired guinea pigs that we're checking what the skin is looking like, because we can miss, guinea pigs are actually quite prone to mite infestations in the skin, and it's easy to miss when they've got a really thick or long coat. So, you know, you want to be checking them on a regular basis that you're getting right down to the skin, usually around the back or over the, you know, the top line of the rump, and check whether they're getting any signs of dandruff or scabby, scaly skin, because that can indicate that you've got a mite infestation there.
Yeah, no, his skin's really good.
Good.
I just wasn't like, because they got plenty of fleece and hidey holes.
Yeah,
and
so he's nice and warm. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's very warm.
Yeah, definitely. If he's tripping over it or getting his feet tangled in it, then we would like you to trim it up. Or if it's getting matted around his bottom.
Yeah, because he gets hair stuck in his little pocket.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have to trim that little area.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah,
good. Excellent.
Good luck, Karen. All the best with it. Thank you for your call. Now, we've only got about a minute or so, so we'll quickly just go to our pet of the week. We've got Mac, a bull Arab cross.
So this is Mac. He's a big boy, 38 kilos, but he's a young dog, really lovable. They're having a little bit of a hard time placing him because of his size, and they feel like he would do best on his own, although he has been with other dogs before. He's really gentle and likes to go out for walks, things like that. He walks well on the lead. So if you're looking for a large dog, large breed dog, come and have a look at Mac. He's quite a cute face. And then little Basil. Basil's a cat, 18-month-old male cat. He's mostly white with some little grey and ginger patches on his tail and head. Super friendly cat. Loves to, you know, watch you from the top of a cat perch. They say not sure how he'll go with children because he hasn't been around them yet, but they feel like he'd be okay either on his own or potentially with another feline friend. So he's a pretty happy, lovely looking little cat. So 18 months old. So again, past the kitten stage, but lots of life yet.
Sure is. Now, if you want to check them out, go to 2nurfm.com.au. And our winner of the $50 pet food voucher is Charmaine from Largs, and we will be in touch. And that is it.
Lovely.
Dr. Kimberly L, thank you so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.